All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. A lot to do today. Mm-hmm. So today's daf is Ayin Dalid 74, and we are picking up on Ayin Gimel Amud Beis 73b, and we're picking up Amar Rav Chama. It's a 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines up from the bottom. The shiur today is sponsored by Paul Pollack in commemoration of the yahrzeit of his beloved sister, Simone Julia Pollack, Zachrini Shulamis Bas Shmuel. Allah Shalom, we hope that on the merit of our Talmud Torah, and Shalom have an aliyah and the family in the Chama. So both says, let's begin. So Rav Chama. Rav Chama said the following. Haiman diyohev zuzei lechavrei, limizban lechamra. So both says, it's actually a very interesting case. I give money to my friend to go ahead and purchase wine for me. Now, Rashi fills in a very important detail over here. And Rashi says, Lizbon lechamra, liknos lo yayin bizman habotzir, umishalim lo yayin lifi damim kalim shekonin oso. So essentially, I want to buy wine while it's cheap. When is it cheap to buy wine? At the grape harvest season, which makes sense, because at the grape harvest season, the wine is not yet usually in existence. So I give Reuven money to purchase some wine on my behalf during the cheap season, we'll call it. Upasha. And he's just negligent. He just doesn't do it. There's no like onus, there's no extenuating any circumstance. He just gets caught up in something else and he never ends up buying the wine. So obviously the issue over here that comes up is what? He owes me wine, but now the problem is the cheap season is over. Wine is more expensive. So what's the halacha? Mishalim le kedaka azil apar vasa de zul shafat. So he goes ahead and he pays me back with wine in accordance with the price that comes out from parvasa de zul shafat. Rashi says, sham makom, shem hamakom, shayayin nikach v'nimkav l'sham l'rov, v'alokin yayin b'yimos habatsi. So we'll say, so such the halacha is, when he pays me back, he has to pay me back in accordance with wine, the value of wine at the cheap season. In other words, he has to give me the, so if I gave him $1,000 to purchase wine, he owes me $1,000 worth of wine with the valuation ultimately again of the cheap season. See, even though again, he may not be able to go ahead and get wine cheap anymore, because that, perhaps that part of the season is already over. Nevertheless, that's what he owes me. Amra Meimar, Amrisa Lishmaita Kamed Rav Zvid Min Arda. So Meimar said, I said this over in front of Rav Zvid of Narda. Amar Ki Kama Rav Chama, Hani Mili B'Yayin Stam. So he said, when did Rav Chama say this? This is only true if I asked Reuven to get me Stam Yayin. Narbo said, not Stam Yenom, you know, but rather again, Stam Yayin, right? Just regular wine. I didn't ask for anything specific, just wine. Aval B'Yayin Zeh. But if I made a request from Reuven for a specific type of wine, then lo. And in fact, that does not apply. We'll say, why does that not apply? Because again, with specific type of wine, who's to say that the merchant would have sold it to me at that particular price? So the Gemara says, Mihemar de Bizamni Nehela. Ravashi Amar, Afilu Yayin Stam Namilo. Ravashi says, no, it's not true. Even Yayin Stam. In other words, the Shaliach Reuven is not obligated to give me wine at the cheap price. Why? My time, asmachtihi. Because Rabbi said this is considered to be a little bit of a hyperbolic statement. Vasmachta lo kanya. And asmachta is not kona. Look at Rashi. Asmachtihi. Afilu hivticho va'amar im eini kona lacha Ephraim Mishali. Einzu ala asmachta. Hoil v'lo kona liyado. Rabbi said, remember the case over here is, I give Reuven $1,000 to buy wine. Reuven says, of course, and if I can't go ahead and get it to you, I'll pay you for my own wine. So the Gemara says, that's an asmachta. We spoke about asmachta a little bit last week. It's a hyperbolic statement that a person doesn't expect to honor. And asmachta lo kanyo. Or Ravashi maishno meha. So we'll say, according to Ravashi, why does Ravashi hold that this case of the wine is any different than the following case? This nan, im ober v'lo avi, eshalim b'metiva. But listen to this case. I hire a sharecropper. And what happens? The sharecropper, look at Rashi for just a moment. So I hire a sharecropper, and he's going to work my field for half of the crops. And I will say, what happens? He gets up, and he stops working. He just stops working. He just leaves the job. So he didn't plow, he didn't seed. Shaman osa kama haisaru yalasos. So we'll say, so again, in that case, the sharecropper is on the hook. He's on the hook for what he committed to do. Shekach kasav lo mitriva. Because Rabbi said this is part of the written agreement. The written agreement that the sharecropper made with me, the owner of the field, is that even if he picks up and he leaves, what's going to be the halacha? He has to pay me whatever it is, the value of the work that he would have done. So the Gemara says, Alma kevan de'af sedei b'hachi. So this seems to be parallel to the wine case. What's happening over here? I hire a worker, he agrees to do a job. And he agrees, he says, if I don't do the job, I'm still going to pay you the proceeds as if I did the job. So why, and what's the halacha? That agreement is binding. We don't say asmachta. Why is that different than the case, ultimately, of the wine? So if I give Reuven $1,000, Reuven, buy me the wine at the cheap price. Reuven says, of course, and if I don't, I'll pay you back for my own wine. Why is that not binding? To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you the difference. Hasam biyado. So the difference is that in the sharecropping case, the sharecropper has the ability to go ahead and purchase the field. Ayin dalet. Hacha lav biyado. We'll say in the wine case, there is a certain variable that Reuven the Shaliach does not control, which is he is dependent on a merchant to sell him the wine. It's possible that what? That the merchant for some reason may not sell him the wine. Therefore, because he does not control the situation in its entirety, that'll be called an asmachta. Amar Rava. So that is the first case for today. And by the way, this actually happens to be, if you think about it, a fascinating case about here. I made a contract to buy merchandise at a time when it was cheap. Person agreed to do that. Did not come through. The Gemara seems to say if he did not come through because of his own negligence, he is still bound to supply me that product at the cheaper price. And even if that means, apparently, that he's going to have to take some level of loss, that would still be binding. Quite interesting. Amar Rava, next case. So here's the case. Three people gave me money to go ahead and purchase something. Right? So let's say three people came. Let's say, for argument's sake, they all want the same thing. Right? Let's say I happen to be I'm a sheep broker, right? I'm a wine broker. Make it a little more interesting, more than myself, right? I'm a wine broker. So what happens? Three people give me money to go ahead and get wine on their behalf. And what happens? This is actually very interesting. V'zabon l'chad minayu. And I will say, I purchased wine. So Reuven, Shimon, Levi all give me money. I purchase wine on behalf of Reuven. So we'll say, what's that halacha? Zabon l'kulhu. Now, this is actually very interesting, that when I purchase wine on behalf of one of them, so the truth is, it's considered as if all of them have an ownership interest in that wine. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is the following. When three people gave me money to buy the same type of product, every single time I buy a unit of product, that unit of product is owned jointly by all three people. So for some reason, should I not be able to procure any additional product, that product that I do own would be split three ways between the people that gave me money. That's only true if they gave me money together kind of as a pot. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi all come together and give me their money, and their money is pooled, even though I'm purchasing separate product for each of them. Then when I buy product, it's really owned jointly three ways. How about sar v'chasim inish l'chudei leman dezabin zabin? Rabbi say, if each of them gave me a separate packle of money, and when I went out to the wholesaler, and I took Reuven's packle of money, and I bought that product, then that product belongs to Reuven. So the only time we say that all three of the investors, so to speak, own the product jointly is when their money was pooled. But if their money dafka was kept separate, then when I go ahead and I purchase product with Reuven's money, it's Reuven's product. Another interesting case, just gets better. Let's listen to this. A situmta, Rashi says, is chosem sherosh min hachendinim ala chavio shal yayin, shelokhin harbe biyachad, umanichin osan va'otza habaylim, umolichin osan achas limkar lachanas, v'rosh min osan ladas, shkom shumas nimkar. So let's listen to this. The way they used to buy wine is the following. I would go to the wholesaler, I would go into his wine warehouse, and there'd be a bunch of barrels. So what would I do? I would essentially initial the barrels or make some type of sign on the barrels indicating I'd write silver on it. So that would show I'm buying these barrels, Like these barrels are mine. So Rabbi says, listen to the interesting question. Listen to the interesting question. Rabbi Papa says, when I write my name or whatever it is, my initials or my simon on that barrel, kanyo, I acquire the barrel. So what does that mean? Lemay hilchasa. What does it mean you acquire the barrel? So Rabbi say, one thing is clear, which is barrels, right? Barrels of wine are acquired either through Mashicha, Hagbah, right? These are metaltalin. So what do you mean that because I signed my name on it, so suddenly it's mine? So the Imam Rav Chaviva Amar, the Mikvei Mamish, Rav Chaviva says, no, literally, I own it. That's Talocha. By signing, by putting my signature on it, I own the barrel. Rabbanan Amri, the Kabuli Alei Mishepara. Oh. The Rabbanan say, no, it doesn't literally mean that I own it. Rather, it means that once I put my initials on it, if I back out of the sale, I get a Mishepara. So, as we've already seen the Mishepara, that any time that I write that I've made a commitment to buy something, even if that commitment is not legally binding, once I give my word, backing out of it is frowned upon heavily by Chazal, to the point that they say that he who extracted or exacted punishment from the Dor HaMabul will go ahead and exact punishment from one who does not honor his word. The Rabbanan says, therefore the Rabbanan says, doesn't literally cone it, but again, Mishepara. But Enoch, so the Gemara says, the Halacha follows the Rabbanan, that once you put your initials on that barrel, it obviously isn't cone it for you. It doesn't acquire it for you, but it binds you to the transaction, to the point that if you withdraw, ultimately you'll be subject to a Mishepara. But in a place, ultimately, again, where what? Where the local custom is that by signing on it, you acquire it, then in Achinami, it affects full acquisition. So it's actually quite interesting. What the Gemara is saying over here is there is a Minagamakum. Minagamakum governs a big part of transactional law. So in Achinami, if it's industry standard, it's common practice, that when you purchase barrels of wine, when you put your signature on it, that is like you bought it. That is the agreed upon procedure in the marketplace. Then in Achinami, that act of signing the barrel would acquire it on your behalf. Next, Hayuhu Tchil Lekosim. So let's remember again, the Mishnah said over here that if I'm purchasing produce, and what happens, and I want to purchase it from the particular individual, but he's one of the gleaners, right? He's one of the gleaners, or he's one of the early harvesters. So there is not yet a set market price. There's not yet a set market price. So the halacha is, I mean, there's no yatsa ashar. So we say as long as the merchant has even unfinished produce or unprocessed produce in his possession, that is enough to avoid any type of ribis concern within the transaction. So says the Gemara, however, so said, the chiddush of the Mishnah is that even though the produce that he has in his possession is unprocessed, it's unprocessed. So I'm putting in a future forward contract for processed produce. He only possesses unprocessed produce, but nevertheless, it satisfies the criteria of Yeshlo. So says the Gemara the following. Amarav, Muchusar Shtayim Posek, Shalom in a Posek. Well, so here's the interesting machlokes. So when we say that you could go ahead and contract a future forward contract, even with unprocessed produce, how unprocessed could it be? How unprocessed could it be? So Rav says, if it's only missing two steps, so to speak, until it's fully processed, that it's considered to be as regular produce, meaning it's considered to be a type of produce you can contract upon. But if it's missing more than three steps, meaning if there's more than three steps until it's fully processed, then you can't make it. That doesn't satisfy the criteria of Yeshlo. Shmuel Amar Shmuel says, no, be the Adama Filu Mea Posek. It's not true. Shmuel says, if the produce is missing even 100 steps until its completion, but those are steps that I control, then it's considered as if it satisfies the criteria of Yeshlo. However, Bidei Shamayim, but if Lamaisa, the steps necessary to go ahead and turn it into processed produce, I don't control, it's Bidei Shamayim, then I feel Achas in a Posek. Then I will say, even if it's only missing one step, it's still not considered, doesn't satisfy the criteria of Yeshlo. So let's analyze this. Posek imo ala godish. So we'll say, remember again, so the Mishnah said, if I want to enter into a future forward contract with the merchant regarding wheat, and let's say again, all he has is the wheat on the threshing floor, it's unprocessed wheat, I can still do it. So the Mishnah says, 1 second, but that's missing many steps. Vaha mechusar mishta bechama lemevash, but it's missing first the step of putting it out in the sun, ultimately to dry out, ulemedash, threshing it, umidra, and winnowing it. So I say, right, so winnowing is when you throw it up in the air and the wind takes away the chaff. We know that from Hilchos Shabbos. That's borer. So the Gemara says kigon deshad bechama viyavish. The case of the Mishnah is where the wheat had already been placed in the sun to dry out. Therefore, what? It's only missing two steps, not missing three, only missing two. So we'll say, you understand? It's actually a fascinating machlokis if you think about it. What the Gemara is saying is the following: one of the criteria in order to allow you to engage in future forward contracts is yeshlo, is that the merchant has the produce in stock. So the interesting machlokis is, when do we consider the produce as being produce that is suitable for commercial purposes? So Rav essentially is going to say, listen, if it's missing up to two levels of processing, it's fine. It's fine. More than two levels of processing, you can't call that commercial worthy product. Shmuel says it can be missing even 100 steps. The issue is, if there are steps I control, then I could get the job done. It's commercial-worthy product. However, if it's B'di Yishayim, if there are other processes that I don't control, then it's not commercial-worthy product. So the Gemara says, Ulu Shmuel domer B'di Yishayim filo achasein aposeg. But according to Shmuel, who says that even if there's one step, but it's not a step I control, it's B'di Yishayim, then it's not considered as Yeshlo. So how can you go ahead and go forward with the case of the wheat? V'hamachos shemidra to B'di Yishayim. But remember, again, if it's missing the step of winnowing, winnowing is B'di Yishayim. Why is winnowing B'di Yishayim? Because what do you need? Wind. Matt could control a lot of things, but he can't make wind. I guess it's not true today. You can make wind today also. Mm-hmm. Right? But so what do you do about the winnowing? To which the Gemara says, no. Efshar benafasa, benafusa. You could always winnow with a sieve. In other words, we're both saying, although the preferred way is to throw the grain up and literally the wind takes away the chaff, you could also winnow, it's a little bit more labor intensive, you could do borer with a sieve, with a sifter, with a sieve. So therefore, since it's bidei adam, therefore, it satisfies the criteria of Yeshlo. The ala avit shalanav. Remember, the next case was if I want to buy wine, right? Or I want to buy grapes. Really, I want to buy wine. So as long as there's a vat of grapes, that is going to be enough. So Gemara says, one second, v'hamuchusr michmar. But says the Gemara, how could I enter into a forward future contract to buy wine when all the seller has is a vat of grapes? It's missing multiple levels. What is it missing? V'hamuchusr michmar. We'll say it's missing the ripening. In other words, the first step of winemaking is that they would allow grapes to sit in a large vat, and the heat of the grapes just being together would soften the grapes and allow the juice to begin to ooze. So it's missing michmar. V'iyulei lebe matzarta, and it still has to be taken to the wine press. L'meidosh, to tread upon the grapes. Ula mingad. And we'll say after you tread upon the grapes, someone has to go ahead and extract the liquid that has now come out of the grapes themselves. So we'll say it's missing many steps. You see, it's missing at least four. What do we have over here? Michmar, Yuli be Matsarta, Meidash Mingad. Four steps. So this is the Kashan Rav, because Rav said ultimately, again, if it's missing two steps, that's fine. But more than two steps already, it's not Yeshlo. Kidetani Rav Chia, ala komer shal zesim. Hachanami ala komer shal anavim. So we'll say, so what are we talking about over here? We're talking about the grapes are already in the ripening vat. Right? So they're already in the michma. So the first step has already occurred. That's fine. V'hamuchosr tlas. But again, remember, that's fine. So now you took it down from four to three. But according to Rav, it can only be missing two steps in order to satisfy the criteria of Yeshlo. And there's still three missing steps, to which the Gemara says, Ba'asra dahu zabin hu dinagir. Talking about in a place, we'll say the minag amakom in this place is that the person ultimately, again, who bought the grapes, he is the one who takes the liquid from the press. So that last step of taking the liquid from the press is actually not obligatory upon the seller, but it's something that the buyer would normally do. Therefore, the process is only missing two steps. Therefore, it satisfies the criteria of Yeshlo. Va'ala ma'atan shal zesim, and upon a vat of olives. V'hamuchusr, Rabbi say, same thing, says the Gemara. It's missing all of these steps. V'hamuchusr michmar, it's missing the ripening, which is accomplished by placing it in the large vat. V'yulei lebeit dafi, taking it ultimately to the press. L'meidash, treading upon it. U'lemingar, extracting the liquid from the press. To which Rabbi Chiya says, no, we're talking about where it's already in the vat. So the first step is already occurring. I ha ikal tlas. That's fine, but there are still the other three steps which need to be accomplished. Ba'asra dahu dizabin hahu mankid. Again, I'll say the same answer as before. We're talking about the minaga makom there is that the person who buys it is the person ultimately who takes it out of the press. Va'al ha beitzim shal yotzer. So we'll say, this is another very interesting case. I can go ahead and purchase a pot. I could purchase a kli, a pottery utensil, an earthenware utensil from the merchant when all he has are balls of clay. So there's no utensil, but once he has the balls of clay, that's considered as if yishto, as if he has the product. So says the Gemara, Amai, but how could this be? You're missing the shaping, right? You have to shape the balls. Viavushe, drying them out. Iyule la'asuna. Right, the boss like going ahead and taking it up into the oven, lemisraf, firing up the oven, ulamefak, and taking it out of the oven. So I'm still missing all of these different places to which the Gemara says, Kigon dimalafafa viavishu. The case over here is where the balls were already shaped. They're already shaped into the case. Therefore, again, it's missing one of the steps. But 1 second, that's only four. So now you've started with four. You took away one. Va'ikatlas, but there are still three more steps, which according to Rav Rabosai will not satisfy the criteria of Yeshlo. Va'asrad hudizabin hudimathik. We're talking about a place where Rabosai the minhag makom was that the one who binds it is the one who ultimately takes it out of the oven. Va'alasid mishiyishka enovikirshan. Rabosai, if I am contracting to go ahead and buy plaster or lime, so even once it's been placed in the oven, ultimately again I can go ahead and buy it. V'hamechusar mikla afuke umedak, but it's still missing these different steps. Mikla bose means burning, afuke means removing, and medak means crumbling. So again, these are all just different steps in the production. Three steps missing, to which the Gemara says, at a place, the minhag hamakom is that the person who buys it is the person who removes it from the fire. So the Gemara says, but according to Shmuel, who says that lamaisa, again, as long as the steps are bidei adam, even if it's 100, right? Why does it have to be a situation where ultimately, again, the person is capable of removing it from the oven? In other words, according to Shmuel, you don't need that. Because according to Shmuel, even as long as it's a step bidei adam, and it's not bidei shemayim, it satisfies the criteria of Yeshlo, to which the Gemara says, you're right. Ema misharoi l'shak o bekivshan. Instead, read it as long as it is ready to be placed in the oven, it is considered to be ultimately, again, as Yeshlo. So we'll say this machlokes Rav and Shmuel, which is a fascinating machlokes. The fundamental dispute is at what point in time, how processed does the product have to be in order for it to satisfy the criteria of Yeshlo. Rav says as long as it is not missing more than two steps for final production. Shmuel says, as long as it's not missing any steps that are bidei shamayim. We'll say we should just know the Rambam paskins, the Shmuel paskins, like Rav, namely, that you could enter into a forward future contract regarding particular product, as long as that product is not missing more than two steps in production. As long as it's not missing more than two steps, it is considered to be a commercial ready product. And again, one would be permitted to enter into a forward future contract. Remember again, now we're going back to the bowls of clay. So the Gemara says, you are not permitted to go ahead and enter into a future forward contract for a utensil until the bowls are made into utensils. To which the Gemara says, Dibra Bimeir. So Rabbi Yossi says, when is that true? Ba'afar lavan. That's something we're talking about white earth. We'll see what's the chap with white earth. Take a look at Rashi. Ba'afar lavan. She'ino matsui. U'kishay machnisin oso in machnisin oso ala maguba va'asoy beitzim. So we'll say, so ultimately, see, he says, we're talking about white earth. So we'll say white earth was much more uncommon, whatever this type of earth is. It was much more uncommon. And when they would bring it in, it would already be kneaded, so to speak, with a K. But then, so the Gemara says, "Avah ba'afar shachar kegon kefar chananya v'chavrosel." But we'll say with what we call black dirt. Rashi says, "Shum matzui mimkomo ein tzarach shiyehe biyado shim ein loze yish loze." So we'll say, so interestingly enough, when it comes, however, to black dirt, even if the merchant does not yet have the dirt in his possession, it's totally fine. Why? Because the Gemara says, because that dirt, kigon kfar shichin v'chavrosel, poskin afa pisha ein loze, yesh loze. Because we'll say, that dirt, because it was so common, even if this particular merchant doesn't have it, someone else always has it. Ameimar Yoev Zuzi, Michi Maeli Afra. So let's listen to this. So a meimar would give money. Michi Maili offer. Rashi says, "Mishehechnis hamocher v'tzavar offer beve." So va offer shachar haya. So as soon as the merchant would have the dirt, as soon as the merchant would have the dirt, and he would make, you know, v'tzavar offer, he would pile the dirt together. A meimar would already give him money for the utensil. So the Gemara says, "Kiman." So who's it being that the Meir follow? Ikrab Meir. So according to Rabbi Meir, Ha'amra Achiyasu. The Meir says that you have to wait literally until it's made. Ikrab Yosi. Ha'amar Afa Pi She'in Laza Yesh Laza. According to Rabbi Yosi, I will say, even if the merchant doesn't even have dirt, you could already engage in the future forward contract. Why? Because Lamaisa, even if this one doesn't have it, he could always get it from someone else. To which the Gemara says, the Olam Rabbi Yosi. In reality, Ameimar conducted himself like Rabbi Yosi. Uba Asra Da Ameimar Ashik Afra. But in the locale of Ameimar, Ashik Afra, Rashi says that dirt was expensive and wasn't easily found. Interesting. I guess, remember, let's say, you can't make earthenware utensils from every single kind of earth, from every kind of dirt. So, okay, the dirt necessary to make utensils ultimately, again, went ahead and was uncommon. If the merchant would have the dirt, then what? Then the buyer would be vested in the transaction and would give him money. But if Lamaise, again, the merchant did not have the dirt, then what? Lo samchadaite. Then the seller would not really be vested in the transaction because he wouldn't know if the buyer would really be delivering. Posik imo ala zevel, kol yimo sashana. So let's remember again, the Mishnah said that you could go ahead and enter into a forward future contract for manure all year round, right? It's always there. So which the Gemara says, Chacham hanetanakama. I will say, in the Mishnah recorded the view of the Chachamim as well, but it seems that the Chachamim seem to say the same thing as the Tanakama, Amar Rava, to which Rava said, no, Yimos Gishamim Ika Benai. I will say, the Nafkamina between them is the rainy season. What does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. So it says, Rashi, Tanakama ka Yimos Hashana Kamar, Upaligali Rabbi Yossi, Va'ar lo Shnoi Mos Hachama, V'lo Shnoi Mos Hagishnam. So it says, Tanakama holds that one could enter into a forward future contract for manure all the time. Rabbi Yossi disagrees. He says only the summer, not the rainy season. So both sides, the Chachamim agree with the Tanakama in that, namely, the seller does not have to have a storehouse of manure. But the Chachamim hold that you can only enter into a forward future contract for manure during the summer, when others have manure readily available. So we'll say, so that's the disagreement. According to the Tanakama, you could go ahead and enter into a forward future contract for manure all year around. According to the Chachamim, even if the merchant doesn't have it, you could enter into a forward future contract, but that's only during the summer season. So let's remember again, the Mishnah then highlighted a very interesting halacha, which was that when you enter into these forward future contracts, so let's say it happens, I contract at a particular price. I both say, now understand, the reason people normally engage in future forward contracts is why? Because you're looking to secure a lower price. But let's say it turns out that because of the market, the prices go down even more. So at the time that I want to take possession of the item is actually cheaper than the price at which I originally bought it. So the Mishnah says, I, as the buyer, have the right to say, listen, either give me the lower price or give me my money back. So it says the Gemara, who garbed the Azuzi Lina Dunya to Bechamor. Let's listen to this case. So there was a man who was marrying a woman. Baruch Hashem. Right? The man who was marrying a woman. And what happened? The father-in-law, right? So the father of the bride told his son-in-law, listen, I want to buy some dowry for my daughter. Do me a favor and be my agent, be my shaliach. Here's the money. Go buy some dowry for my daughter. Meaning, go buy dowry for your future wife. So says the Gemara, what happens? So the guy went ahead and he contracted to buy jewelry. Right? The son-in-law contracted to buy jewelry. And what happens? Zol nedunya. The price of the jewelry went down. So let's say at the time when the son-in-law was going to take delivery, the price had gone down. So obviously the son-in-law does not want to pay the price that they negotiated at the time of the future forward contract, because that's higher. He wants to pay the lower price. So what's talacha? Also, come to Rav Papa. So they came up for Rav Papa. Rav Papa says like this. Amrlei, ipasakta imo kishar gavah shal gashra. So at the time of the transaction, you said, listen, we are agreeing on this price now. But we also agree that I'm going to get the best deal possible. So should the price go down in the future, you agree to give me the merchandise at the time. I mean, you agree to give me the merchandise at the lower of two prices, either the price now or the price when I take receipt of the merchandise. So if they agreed on this, then shakal kidahashta, then certainly the son-in-law has the right to get the jewelry at the current lower price now. Ve'ilo shakal. But if at the end of the day, but if they did not stipulate this explicitly at the beginning, that this transaction is governable, so by what we call shar ha-gavoa, you know, that phrase is a little bit misleading. Because shar ha-gavoa sounds like the higher price. Gavoa in this context doesn't mean higher. Gavoa in this context means what? Better. So essentially says, Rav Papa, listen, what did you agree upon? If you agreed upon shara gavoa, then you have the right to take the jewelry at the current lower price. If you did not go ahead and agree on shara gavoa, then what? Then you are locked in to the original price at the time that you agreed upon, at the time that you made the future forward contract. Amalei Rabbanan Rav Papa, so Rabbanan said to Rav Papa, v'ilo pasik shakel kimeikara. But is that true? I mean, they said to Rav Papa, why is that true? Even if they did not explicitly agree on Shar Gavoa, the son-in-law should still be able to take possession of the objects in accordance with the price now. After all, why? Because it will say he never acquired the object. Why did he never acquire the object? Mo'os ninhu. All he did was give money. Umo'os lo kanu. And I will remember again, what's the halacha? Mo'os inon konos. Money does not acquire, right? Money does not acquire metalkalin. Therefore, what? It's true he made an agreement, but lamaisa again, he should still be, that agreement is not binding, and he should still be able to go ahead and get the product, in this case the jewelry, at a lower price. So Amalahu to Rav Papa said, you're right. Ana nami the kabuli ale mishe para kamina. I agree. It happens to be that lamaisa, technically speaking, the son-in-law could back out of the transaction, or the father-in-law could back out of the transaction, and get the jewelry at the current lower price. Rav Papa was saying, I was talking in terms of mishapara, and here's how it works in mishapara. I pasek kishara gavoa, mocher kahadir be mekaba le mocher mishapara. So we'll say, if the buyer and seller agreed, that's what? That this transaction was governed by shara gavoa, by the best price. So if, let's say, the price of jewelry goes down, and at the time when the son-in-law wants to take possession, the mocher says, hey, I'm backing out of this, then the mocher would get a mishapara. Ilo pasik, but if they did not agree upon shar gavoa, then what? Lo keach kahadir bei, and the purchaser wants to pull out, mekabel ale mishapara. Ultimately, again, the lo keach ultimately will get the mishapara. So both say, so bottom line, it seems to be that everybody is agreeing that even if you did not explicitly stipulate shar gavoa, it's understood that you are entitled to get the best price. And since, again, all you did is give money over here, and money is not an effective form of kinyan by metaltalin, technically speaking, you have the right to get the best price. So the Gemara says, "Amalei Rav Yonah Papa, umi mai d'rabbanan hita pligelei d'Rabbi Shimon, d'amri ma'os lo kanu." So I'll say, how do you know that this is a case? Then in this case, it's the Rabbanan who are arguing on Rabbi Shimon, who says that ma'os lo kanu, that money does not affect acquisition by metaltalin. Va'afilu hachi, and even so, ipasek yeshar agavah shakal kidahashta. If you explicitly agreed that this transaction is governed by shara gavoa, then you could take possession of the product, in this case the jewelry, with the current prices. Ilo pasik, but if you did not explicitly state this, shakil kidime kara. You have to take like the earlier agreed upon price. Dilma, perhaps Rabbi Shimoni. Perhaps I will say this is Rabbi Shimon, the Amar Maos Konos. Perhaps this is Rabbi Shimon who says that money acquires v'chi pasak kishar hagavoa shakil. And ultimately, again, when they agree, and when they made this explicit agreement, he takes only with shara gavoa. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, v'chi pasik shara gavoa shakal ki hashta, to which the Gemara says, ilo pasik, shakal to meikara. So only if they agreed upon explicitly kishara gavoa that he gets to take for the current price. If not, the agreed upon previous price is the one that binds them. Mishum dekani lohu zuzi. And that would be because money does have the ability to acquire. Aval Rabbanon, bein pasak, bein lo pasak, shakil ki hashta. But according to the Rabbanon, whether they explicitly said shar gavoa or not, he nevertheless has the ability to take possession of the jewelry in accordance with the price now. De daite de inish atara zila. Because it will say everyone knows that the das of a person is what? For the lower price. To which they want to say, Amrlei, Amar Amr Rabbi Shimon Bechad Tara. Perhaps Rabbi Shimon only holds Ma'os Kona, so I will say, in a situation where there is one price. We're not dealing with price fluctuation. Betrei Tare Mi Amar. But when there's a case of potential price fluctuation, different prices, would Rabbi Shimon say that Ma'os Konos? Dilo Temach, because if you don't say this, Misha Para Belokeach Rabbi Shimon Leslei. I will say, ultimately again, then there'll never be a case of a Misha Para by the purchaser. Maybe you'll say that's true. Vatanya, we learned. Mikom makom kach halacha. Rabbi says, quoting from the Mishnah. What did the Mishnah say? This is the halacha. Mikom makom kach halacha. Aval amru chachamim mishe para. Rabbi says, what is the meaning of that statement? My mikom makom. Lab the loshna lokeach, loshna mocher. Mekabale mishe para. So we'll say that loshna mikom makom tells me that both the purchaser as well as the seller are subject to the Misha Parah curse. Eloki kam Rabbi Shimon, b'chad tara b'chei tari lo'omer. Rather, Bosei, which you have to say the language, which is logical. When does Rabbi Shimon say Ma'os Konos? So Bosei, remember, we don't pass like Rabbi Shimon. Right? Rabbi Shimon is one who says that Ma'os Konos, money has the ability to acquire the Tatlin. We do not pass in that way. But the Gemara is suggesting, even Rabbi Shimon who holds Ma'os Konos, that's only in the case where what? You're dealing with an object that has one fixed price. One fixed price. When you're dealing with product or an item that by definition has price fluctuation, even Rabbi Shimon will agree that Ma'os in on Konos. Why? Because even Rabbi Shimon will agree, this, you have a conflict over. You have a conflict of transactional principles. Principle number one is Ma'os Konos. Principle number two is that Daita De'inish, that a person ultimately always has his mind, the person on the best price. So when those two concepts conflict, which one wins out? So apparently, even according to Rabbi Shimon, the second one wins out. Namely, that a person's das is always on the best price. Therefore, even Rabbi Shimon would say that in that kind of case where there's price fluctuation, ma'os ain't on konos. To which the Gemara says, only Ravachari Dirava, Ravashi, the Sefuk Lei, the Shliach Shavi Meikar. So once he says, the Gemara, I don't understand. Even in this case over here, why would you say that the son-in-law, who is acting on behalf of his father, his father-in-law, should be subject to a Misha Parah? Well, so let's say the son-in-law pulls out of the transaction. All he is a shaliach, right? He's not a principal in the transaction. If he's not a principal, then how could he be subject to a Misha Parah? To which the Gemara says, Amalei bitagra dizabin umazbin. We're talking about a situation over here where what? Where the son-in-law happens to be, Rashi says, bitagra dizabin umazbin, lo shliach na'ase elohu posekim chasno v'chasno posekim acherim mustakir. So we'll say the case over here is where what? The son-in-law is not just simply acting as a shaliach, but rather again, he's acting in the capacity as a merchant. Once he's acting in the capacity of a merchant, then halacha l'maisa, again, he is subject to Misha Parah. So we'll say, I just tell you, this happens to be a very important halacha. So just read to you the Shulchan Aruch very quickly. Shulchan Aruch passes in Yaradeya, Hilchos Ribis, you know, interesting enough, the halachos of Ribis are in Yaradeya, they're not in Choshen Mishpat. Just an interesting idea. So the halachos of Ribis, Simin Kofai and Heisiv Zayin writes the following. Listen to this. Okay, so we'll say, so understand, this is a very important discussion, because here our discussion is the following. I enter into a future forward contract to purchase X, doesn't matter whatever it is. So, and what happens? I take possession of it later. When I come to take possession, the price has dropped. Price has dropped. I want to say, okay, I want to purchase at the current price. So am I bound by the previous agreed upon price, or can I pay the current price? So how do we paskin? Kevan shenikva ashar, mutar lifsok ashar agavah. So we'll say, even when a price is fixed, one is permitted to negotiate the transaction based on the best price. Ketzer, what's the case? Hayuchitin im karos dalitzin besela upasikim oshitin lachitin kisharazol im amdu acharkach eser sin besela no sinlo eser sin besela no sinlo amos tam v'lo pasikim okashar gavah b'hozlu no sinlo kishar shem kisharazol. We'll say, so essentially again the Shulchan Aruch says, on a very simple level, everything depends on how you structure the transaction. It was normal to structure transactions to say, listen, I am entering into a future forward transaction to buy from you X for X amount of dollars. But you could put in there what's called the Shar HaGavoa clause. If you put in the Shar HaGavoa clause, what that is buyer protection. What that essentially says is, should there be a difference in value at the time when I go ahead, and I've also have to understand something, that would have to be a pretty dramatic drop, because understand, future forward transactions are already at what? already at a discount, right? Because remember, you're buying produce that does not yet exist, and you're willing to front the money, right? Because you're getting some kind of discount. So remember, there have to be a pretty dramatic drop in value, but nevertheless, if you put in the Shar HaGavoa clause that allows you to take, that allows you at the time when you want to take possession of the object to go ahead and not pay or get refunded the difference between the money you paid and the current value now. But if you don't insert the Shar HaGavoa clause, then you are bound by the agreement as it was made originally. Says the Mishnah. Malva adam es arisa b'chitin b'chitin. Lezer, so let's listen to this. Now remember, up until now, we've always been operating with the idea that sa'ah b'sa'ah is asr. Right? That I can't lend you a sa'ah of wheat, and you'll give me back a sa'ah of wheat. What's the reason for that? Because since a sa'ah of wheat may be worth now X, and when you give it back to me, it's worth X plus Y. So what's the problem? The problem of ribis. Right? I'm lending you an item that was worth one thing. You're going to give me back an item that's worth much more, even though it's the same saw of wheat. Because the dollar value could change so dramatically. Therefore what? Therefore it's aser. The Mishnah says over here that it's mutter. So the Mishnah says over here, what's the case? Ma'ava adam es arisa b'chitin. So we'll say, I lend my sharecropper wheat. I lend my sharecropper wheat. And what happens? Malva adam es arisa b'chitin, b'chitin l'zera. So I'm lending him wheat. And what is he going to do with that wheat? He's going to plant it and he's going to give me back wheat. So we'll say, since he's sa'a b'sa'a, normally that's us. Rashi says the Gemara is going to discuss why it's mutter. Avalo le'echol. But we'll say this only applies when I'm lending him wheat for planting purposes and not for consumption purposes. We'll discuss all this in the Gemara. Shahir Rabbi Gamliel malva es arisa b'chitin b'chitin. I'm sorry, Shere Rabbi Gamliel Malve Esarisav Chitin Bechitin Lezera. Because Rabbi Gamliel used to lend his sharecropper's wheat for the purpose of planting that wheat with the expectation that they were going to give him back wheat. Biyoker v'huzlu. Supposed to listen to this. If, let's say, when I lent the wheat was expensive. But then what happened? It went ahead and it went down in value. Or, O Bezol v'hukru, or I lent it when it was cheap, and then it went up in value. Notel mehem kishar hazol. Let's see, he would go ahead and he would, this is all Rabbi Gamliel, he would go ahead and he would only take repayment back in accordance with the cheaper prices. And this is not true because the halacha demands it, rather, elo sherotz lahachmir al atzmo. But rather, why Rabbi say because he wanted to be machmir on himself. So again, a lot to talk about in this Mishnah. A, the fact that we allowed sa'ah b'sa'ah, that's number one, which until now was normally asr. And number two, this idea that Rabbi Gamliel would go ahead and always conduct himself kishar hazol, not because he was bound by it, but ultimately, again, because he chose to be machmir on himself. So we'll stop over here for today. I'm just going to share with you a short idea on the parasha.